We're going to speak to Mary Wilson now. Good afternoon, Mary. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, fine. We're just talking, and I'm saying your name correctly because I've got a co-presenter on my show who's Spanish, and her name's Mary as well. So we've got two Marys on the show. You know, you wait all your life for one, and then two come along.
Yes, and then two come along at once.
Mary, it's great to have you on. It really is. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about this new album that you have out, and it looks fantastic. So I'm looking forward to having a chat with you about that. But we'd be remiss of me not to talk about your career from the early 80s, isn't it? Going back a few years now.
Just a few. Quite a while ago now.
I ask this to a lot of people, but were you always into music from an early age?
Yeah. I mean, it was also my family. My brother's a musician as well.
Yeah.
And my parents both sang. My mum had a really nice voice, and we would all harmonise together. You know, there was a bit of Von Trapps going on in our house. So, I mean, from about the age of five, I think, because it was a combination of seeing Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz and Meet Me in St. Louis, which I still have to watch every Christmas, and wanting to sing like her, really. Well, wanting to have an effect on people when I sang like she did. You know, she could make you laugh, and then 2 minutes later could make you cry, you know. So I wanted to have that, but I wanted to wear the sort of... I wanted to dress up like Shirley Bassey because I saw her as well on Sunday Night at the London Palladium on TV. So I thought, right, I'm going to sing like that and I'm going to dress up like her. That was the plan anyway.
So how on earth do you... I mean, nowadays, of course, people are putting their stuff on YouTube and they've got all these different apps and websites for new singers. How on earth do you actually get a hit record?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I mean, it was very, very different back then. And funnily enough, I'm just in the process of doing stuff on my website at the moment because I kind of do it all myself. It's very different, isn't it, now? I mean, you get these people who, they say, oh, they've had 3 million hits on YouTube and that's how they've been discovered. And I kind of question that because I think, I'm not quite sure if that's true. I'm not quite sure if there might be a record company behind this. Sort of, so it's like a scam, you know. It's like a PR stunt, which is fine because PR stunts have been going on since the beginning of time.
I was going to say it probably has always happened, but it was happening in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, we did all kinds of rubbish. I mean, one of us phoned the Evening News or the Evening Standard and told them that David Bowie had been seen. This is before I heard it, that he'd been seen in HMV buying a record by someone called Mary Wilson. And they printed it.
We just
made it up, but they printed it. So, of course, then I was getting my friends phoning me up saying, oh, my God, David Bowie's bought your record, you know.
I'm just wondering if David Bowie maybe, like, 15, 20 years later was asked in an interview. So we know you're a big Mary Wilson fan, so...
I wonder. Oh, that would be a thrill.
Yeah.
So it's always been going on. But I think there's a bit of that going on there. And it's, the thing is, artists aren't so much developed anymore. You know, back in the day, you were given, you know, maybe two or three albums to do before they felt that you'd found yourself or your style or your market, you know, all that kind of thing. Whereas now, they have to have a hit pretty much straight away, and otherwise it's goodbye, you know. It's much more corporate, isn't it, I think?
Oh, certainly, yeah. And what with Spotify and Apple Music and all those guys and YouTube, there's not so much money in it as well.
It's hard to make money. Yeah. That's why everyone has to play live, because that's where I sell my CDs mainly, is at my concerts, you know. So, it's a different ball game, really.
So how did you get this big hit that even, I mean, I was listening to Radio 2 the other day and it was being played on there still, you know, all these years later. So it's still around a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I was just saying, funnily enough. I mean, it wasn't my first single. I mean, I released, how many singles did I release? Love Man, Dance Car, Beat the Beat, Baby It's True. I think there was four or maybe five singles before Just What I've Always Wanted.
Yeah.
And they all kind of teetered a little bit in the charts, and, you know, one of them went to, like, number 40, which, of course, back then, that was respectable.
Yes.
To get into the top 40 or top 50, that was really something, whereas now you have to get into the top 5, really, and you have to get to number 1. There was none of that then. And Just What I've Always Wanted was in the charts for, I don't know, 14 weeks, 16 weeks, because it went in and it climbed and it climbed and it climbed, and that's... how it happened back then.
I was going to say, yeah, because I remember the days when I used to, remember when you used to record the Top 40 on Radio 1? And a song would come in maybe 1 week at 35 and then work its way to 25 and then next week it's 12 and then it's in number 4. In nowadays, they do it so it's got to go straight to number 2 or something like that, hasn't it? So.
Yeah, and also, I don't really think anyone's that interested.
No,
whereas I think back then, it was not only the artists that were going, oh, I can't wait to find out how it's done. And I'm sure certain artists probably still feel that way. But I think the public did as well. They'd be listening and they'd go, oh, my God, so-and-so's gone to number 10 or what, you know. It did involve the public a lot more, I think.
I can't remember the last time I listened to the charts. Is it still on, even?
I don't think so, is it?
I don't know. Last time I was listening, it was Bruno Brooks. So,
yeah. Yeah, I've got no idea, but that just shows you how much it's changed. And I think it's because young people, for us, it was part of our everyday life and saving up your money to go to the record store and buy the album, which was very big because it was vinyl and you could pore over it for days and read the inner sleeve and found out who made the tea on the session and who played bass and, you know, stuff like that. And because we didn't have all the other stuff that they have now. We didn't have phones and iPods and iPads and computers and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat and WhatsApp. And I mean, it's endless, isn't it?
Exactly.
And I think that's the difference, really. It's not that young people aren't interested in music. I think they are, but it's not the be-all and end-all, you know?
So, you're absolutely right. And so when you said you brought out a few songs prior to Just What I Always Wanted, and so were you expecting this to be similar, or in your wildest dreams did you still believe that radio stations would be playing it in 2016?
God, no, I don't think that even occurred to me. And funnily enough, it was the one that didn't get... all the other ones got really great reviews. And even though when you look back at them, the production on the other ones isn't really very good at all, but I think the atmosphere was there.
Yeah.
And with Just What I've Always Wanted, a lot of people, I think it was on Round Table, I don't know if you remember that, where they would review singles.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I remember we were all listening to it, and it kind of didn't do that well, and people were sort of saying, oh, you know, she's not doing her usual retro thing, and blah, blah, blah. And yet, that was the one that really made it for me, you know.
And so was it, was it overnight success in one respect? Walking down the street, people start to recognise you?
Yeah, I mean, because of my hair, obviously.
I've got to ask you about that, yeah.
I mean,
the beehive.
I could go out without my beehive, but I very rarely did because it was who I was.
Yes.
And even if I did, I didn't change my face. It's always the same face, isn't it? However your hair is.
I've not got any hair, so I can't really change much at all.
Well,
so.
Fair enough. Because people say to me now, where's your beehive? And I say to them, well, have you got the same hairdo you had in 1982?
I would have said it's in the fridge, but anyway.
Yeah.
Right,
so, you know.
Fantastic. We're going to play the song, of course, Just What I Always Wanted, then we'll talk about your new stuff coming up next. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, thanks.
Here we go. You might recognise this. we're talking to Mari Wilson, of course. Mari Wilson there, just what I always wanted, and I've always wanted to have this interview. So, Mari, let's talk about the new album then. I'm looking at the list of songs on here, and I'm going to ask you, I mean, are these songs that have impacted your life? You were talking about singers that you used to love to listen to many years ago.
Yeah. Well, this kind of came about in the year 2000. I played Dusty Springfield in a musical called Dusty the Musical.
All right, yeah, I've got a friend of mine who's doing that very same role at the moment, I think. Or
oh,
just
really?
Done it as well, yeah.
And so it was a musical, and we you know, it toured the UK for about, I don't know, 9 months or something. And ever since then, people have, you know, kept saying to me, oh, you know, why don't you ever do a concert of Dusty songs? And it was like, well, don't know, I'm not sure. How can I do it without it being like a tribute act?
Yeah.
Because, I don't impersonate her or anyone really, and so I couldn't really work out how to do it, so it took me years really to sort of feel comfortable doing it. And then so I did a few concerts and they sold out really quickly, and I thought, wow, people want to hear these songs.
Yes.
You know, and then it just evolved into not just Dusty songs, but all the girls I would watch as a kid, you know, Petula Clark, Dusty Springfield, Sandy Shaw, Cilla Black,
and Jean Pitney.
Sorry?
And Jean Pitney.
and Jean Pitney. Well, actually, Dusty did.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I didn't know that.
A lot of people say, oh, you know, there's a Jean Pitney song on there. Yeah. Well, yeah, there is, but I did it because Dusty covered it. And but, of course, my version is pretty left of centre.
Yeah.
It's quite out there, my version of, I don't know if you've heard it yet.
I have, yeah, I heard it earlier, actually.
It's very different. It's very Star Trek.
Now, Island of Dreams, I love that because I first heard that from the Seekers had that as a hit, didn't they, as well?
It was the Springfields.
And the Springfields with Dusty, of course, in there, and I like her version better. And so the songs that you put on here are all songs that we would play on this show on a regular basis because they're just great, timeless classics, aren't they? So
yeah, they are. Well, it's kind of, I think, from the golden age of songwriting, basically, that, you know, pop songwriting in the 60s was at its peak, I think.
Yeah.
And simply because of the whole Tin Pan Alley thing, you know, you had writers in one room and they were taken to the artist, and so everyone had a role, the producer, the songwriter, the artist, you know. And so that way you got kind of each element was the best,
yeah.
You know. So they're fantastic songs, and they're so good that you can change them and they still sound good,
yeah.
You know, because they're so well written and well structured. So that's what happened, and so I've been touring it for the last year, and I'm continuing the tour in November and December. So
tell us a little bit about White Horses. That's a song I don't know very well. So, but it's something that resonates with you quite a lot in your life.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to watch TV with my dad because he was a shift worker, so he'd be at home often when I came back from school. And so we'd watch, you know, Blue Peter, Magpie, all of those. And then, of course, there were the Eastern European ones like Belle and Sebastian and another very strange one called The Singing Ringing Tree. That was a bit scary, that one.
Oh,
and
I don't know that one. Yes.
Then there was this one, and the song White Horses was sung by a girl called Jackie. And I just loved the song. I loved it. It was so melodic and dreamy and a bit sad. And her version was all, you know, acoustic guitars. And so we did it, obviously we did it a bit differently. But it's still a beautiful song. And the weird thing is that when we started rehearsing, I sent a link of it on YouTube to my guitarist, because I said, look, you should learn this because you're much younger than me, you won't know this song. And he wrote back and he said, well, I do know it because my dad wrote it.
All right.
So that, I mean, you know, you couldn't make that up.
No, it just couldn't, could you? No. When you're singing these songs, do you, sorry, Mari, do you, because they're so ingrained in you, and they've been there for decades now, and, you know, you've maybe heard them millions of times, some of them, is it difficult to do it slightly differently, or are you trying to always go back to the original style, if you can see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. No, because I've made them my own. Mm. I feel like, well, first of all, when I first started recording, I found I didn't really need the lyrics to any of them, because I just knew them, you know. But I've changed them quite a lot, I think. And so when I sing them now, I feel like I'm singing a Mary Wilson song. I don't feel like I'm doing a Cilla song or a Dusty song. And I hope that doesn't sound...
That's a fine line between kind of honouring the song, but owning it for yourself, but also not being disrespectful to the original.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all of that. It's all of that. And that's what I mean. I hope I don't sound like I'm being terribly pompous or conceited by saying that, but I think I have made them my own. So when I sing them, a lot of people have come up to me and said, God, it sounds like a new song, you know, and that's very flattering because that's what I'm aiming for.
Well, it looks like a fantastic album, it really does, and I could be chatting with you all afternoon, but time is beating us. Now, one of the songs on there, my producer said, will you play this one, because it's one of my favourites, and it's the old Cilla Black song, of course, Anyone Who Had a Heart, and was Cilla somebody that you liked as well in the day?
Yeah, and funnily enough, Dusty recorded this song as well.
Oh, right,
wow. People don't realise that,
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, because Cilla was like, you know, and I'm talking about before Blind Date and Surprise Surprise and all that. This is when she had her singing TV show, you know, and they it was a very common thing back then. Everyone had their own, you know, Andy Williams, Lulu, everybody. Yeah. And she was just so likable and so ordinary. And I suppose people like her made people like me, who comes from a very working class background, think that there was a chance I could do it, you know, and that's probably why I liked her. And also her voice, you know, technically, she wasn't the best singer in the world, but she had something. There was something about her voice.
She interpreted the song well, didn't she?
She did. Yeah. She did, and she had an unusual sound, and there was an honesty there that I think was very appealing, you know.
Because, I mean, some of her songs were released by, I think, Dionne Warwick did some of her songs.
Oh, don't
the American
talk to Dionne Warwick about Cilla Black. Oh, she gets very cross.
Oh, I won't mention her.
I've seen her interviewed, and people have asked her about Cilla Black, and no, it's not something she likes to talk about. I think she's well, anyway, that's all I shall say.
Well, we'll leave it there, then. She's a big listener of this programme, Dionne. She loves it. But anyway, right. No, she isn't really. I don't know of anyway, you never know.
Yeah, hi there, Dionne.
Love your music, and great voice. Listen, thank you for coming on, Mary. Really appreciate your time this afternoon here in Spain. Do you ever get out to Marbella, Costa del Sol ever?
Well, yeah, I do. I do. I mean, I love Spain. I mean, for some reason in the 80s, I was quite big in Spain. Everyone else was big in Japan and America, and I was big in Spain.
Well, at least you
didn't
have to fly so far. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe there's a concert in the waiting for you here somewhere, you know, maybe somebody's listening.
Well, I hope so. We were supposed to do one a couple of weeks ago, and there were lots of problems to do with the promoter, and obviously I won't go into it, but I'm definitely planning to come back, because it's I do love Spain. I love the diet, for a start. It's because I'm celiac, so I'm gluten-free, so that Mediterranean diet is perfect.
Oh, you'll love it.
You'd
love it here, certainly.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mary. Thanks for coming on, and wish you all the best with this album. Can people download this via the usual ways, and how
can
they find it?
Yes, they can download. It's on iTunes. It's, you know, you can go to my website and click on it. There's all kinds of ways. It's definitely, it's out there, yes.
Good stuff. Thank you, Mary. Have a great
day.
Thank
you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Anyone who ever loved would look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed would look at me and know I dream of you. Knowing I love you so. Anyone who had a heart would take me in his arms and love me too. You couldn't really have a heart and hurt me like you hurt me and be so untrue. What am I to do? Every time you go away,
that's the new one, Mary Wilson, her new album, and of course the old Cilla Black song, Dusty Springfield song, Anyone Who Had a Heart.